Monday, everybody. Welcome back to the Couchside Judges. I'm Scott Fontana. Follow me on Twitter at Scott_Fontana.
And I'm Dan Urban. Follow me at The Dan Urban. Follow the podcast at Couchside Judges. And subscribe to us on YouTube and everywhere else, please.
Pretty please. With sugar on top, even.
And make sure you read the scoring criteria because we talk about MMA judging.
Sometimes.
And, yeah. And you should, you know what that is.
We only talk about it when we do an episode of this show.
Yeah, it's true.
And also not when we do an episode of the show. We talk about it a lot because we're nerds.
Yeah.
Dan, before we even get into this past weekend's extremely important events at the MMA Warehouse,
mm-hmm.
which, by the way, MMA Warehouse is where I used to buy my my grappling gear.
MMA Warehouse.
Mm-hmm. So that's why the UFC couldn't label theirs the MMA Warehouse. They called it the UFC Apex. It was taken.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I know one of the fighters on these figures has MMA Warehouse. Actually, I was seeing if it was one of these two.
Dan recently purchased a couple of in-the-box round five figures, if anyone remembers those figures that they made about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
They are...
Well, thanks to you bringing that up.
Of BJ Penn and Jim Miller.
Yeah, Jim doesn't look anything like...
Jim doesn't look remotely like Jim. Not even a little bit.
Not even a little bit.
Like, he looks like he looks like a fighter in so much as that. And there is, as I grab it here, there's like some semblance of his tattoo. But I'm trying to decide who it looks most like. It's definitely not Jim Miller.
So, I've got a name. I don't know if you've seen the movie Lucky You with... It's a poker movie with Eric Bana. It's terrible.
I'm not familiar.
He looks at the end of the movie, they're at a final table.
Mm-hmm.
He looks like one of the players at a final table if you just put a baseball hat on him. That's who it kind of triggers in my brain.
Okay. I don't know who that is. And
yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so as much as we really are excited to talk about just all the incredibly impactful stuff that happened at the UFC Apex in Saturday's uber mega UFC Vegas 88 Tuivasa versus Taibura fight card. I want to put that on hold because something crazy happened this week involving Mark the Hammer Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
He essentially saved his parents' lives, as the story is told. His dog woke him up. The house was on fire. He gets his parents out. He was unsuccessful in, unfortunately, saving the dog's life as well. Little Hammer.
R.I.P. Hammer.
Rest in peace, Hammer. He is, he's been in and out of the hospital now. They sent him home. He had to go back. I guess he had developed some pneumonia-like symptoms, as his kids were talking about, as we heard on Saturday afternoon. So all the best, of course, to Mark Coleman and his family as well. Mm-hmm. This is a crazy time for them, but just... All I really wanted to bring this up for is just to point out just how awesome Mark Coleman is.
Yeah.
For saving his parents' lives.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's pretty cool.
It's not cool that it happened. It's just crazy that, like...
Well, I'm not saying having a fire is cool.
And I think that's exactly what you were saying, you sicko.
I'd never... No. I'm torn up about Hammer.
I know. No, it's just... You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm weird. But, like, sometimes you think to yourself, like, what would I do if there was, like, a situation where, like, I needed to jump and act, right? Like, you think you would do it, but would you? I don't know. There's no way to know unless you've been there. We know what Mark Coleman would do. He jumps into action, and he saved his parents' lives, and he was so thrilled to have them, and he's just so overcome with emotion and sad for his dog and everything in the video that came out this week. And it just, that story has just been so incredible to me. It just kind of breaks my heart that someone like him has not been taken care of well enough into his post-career. Because someone like him should be just owning stuff. Like, he should just be set for life. He really wasn't and isn't. And it just breaks my heart that that was the case coming in. But now everyone sees what's going on and everyone jumped in action, of course, and contributed to the, you know, GoFundMe that his kids started and everything. And they very quickly reached their goal and surpassed that goal. I just don't want us to ever forget about the Mark Colemans of the early MMA days.
You know my Mark Coleman story, right?
I don't, actually.
It was last year on my birthday, I got good seats for the Yankee game.
Oh, this. Yes. Okay.
And he was like, he was in the section below me. I was in the lower section, but he was in the legend section.
Mm-hmm.
And that is
where he belongs.
Almost. Yeah, of course. That's kind of like gated community. There's no way to get through down there from, from main lower level. And he walked by and I'm like, I asked my sister, I said, is that this guy? It's not this guy. He wouldn't be at a baseball game.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, no, that's him. And I'm like, yeah, there's not too many people that just look like Mark Coleman. It's like, so it's 100% it was him. And I was waiting for him to come back again. I would ask him for a picture, but he never came back that way.
Mm-hmm.
Probably knew I was going to ask him to take a picture.
He did.
He's like, I got a baseball game to watch. Or maybe
he didn't know. What if he didn't know and that was the reason why he went back? What if he knew and he just wanted to support his fans? So he said, you know what? I'll take a break. This guy knows me. I'm going to take a picture with him.
I would love if he came back. I didn't see him.
But yeah, that just, it just kind of reminded me this week of, we don't think about the Mark Colemans so much anymore, especially if they're not seated cage side for the, for every event, right? They're not getting invited back to the, by the UFC at every pay-per-view, right? We're not seeing him there. We're not thinking about him. He's kind of outside, out of mind in a lot of ways. We still, I mean, people who know remember him, but the UFC very quickly turns the page on things as we move along. I mean, no one even really talks so much anymore about like Anderson Silva or anything like that. We were having these GOAT conversations about, oh, isn't Israel Adesanya the GOAT of middleweight division? I'm like, shut up. Get out of here.
The hammer's a couple. I don't even know.
Several generations.
Yeah, do you call them generations now?
I think you probably look at generation as obviously a very, or eras probably is a better way to do it rather than generation, but we're several eras removed from Mark Coleman's era. I mean, he was more like, you know, late 90s and early 2000s. When he won the 2000, the original Pride Grand Prix, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're talking almost 25 years. That's how long, that is a generation. That's a real true and honest to goodness generation of people have been removed from that.
Like Chuck's never talked about anymore. Anderson.
Very rarely. I think Chuck still shows up at events. You do still see him sometimes like there. You said, so Anderson, it's a little different.
Is kind of.
At least on UFC broadcast, right? So just, it just kind of reminded me that, like, we really need to, it's kind of up to the people, the fans, to not let these names kind of disappear into the ether. Because, yes, they go into the UFC Hall of Fame. That's not an actual location. There's nowhere to go.
Like, it's not at the Apex?
They have PI? They have plaques at the PI. But, like, do you go to the PI? Can you go to the PI and just tour?
I think they have tours.
Yeah, but like, actually, I don't know that, to be fair. But like, it's not the same thing.
So would you put it on par with Yankee Stadium, Monument Park?
No, because it's not somewhere you would always go anyway.
All right.
Yeah, at least Monument Park, like, you go to a ball game, if you get there early enough, it's still open. You can go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
You could do that 81 times a year.
Yeah.
You know?
Even more times, usually, because the Yankees do usually make it to October baseball.
What the UFC should do is they should and will are obviously two different things, but what they should do with their proprietary UFC Hall of Fame, which is not an MMA Hall of Fame, but very specifically a UFC Hall of Fame, right? They need to open a physical location somewhere near T-Mobile Arena, which is more or less their hub, right? So that when you're there for the big shows that are in town, just like about three times a year, ballpark, they're at T-Mobile, at least it's there. And it's there anytime, too. Like, if you're in Vegas, you're anywhere near Allegiant Stadium, which I understand is actually not the most convenient. Dan, am I right or wrong?
No, Allegiant.
To get to from the Strip? You've been there, Allegiant, so you know better.
Yeah, you can walk to it. It depends what, where you're staying. If you stay at Mandalay Bay, you can 100% walk to Allegiant.
Okay. All right, so you know better. I'll trust you on your word for that. But, yeah, just put it somewhere near there. Like, find a nice spot. Open up a little area. Like, I mean, it doesn't have to be super huge, but like, put some memorabilia up there, let people tour, and I don't know, I think it'd be cool.
How does it work with starting a Hall of Fame?
What do you mean, how does it work?
Like, what if me and you were like, you know what, we're going to start the MMA Hall of Fame?
Sure. We got money?
That's what I'm asking. How does it work? Do you
I think you have to start, really, like, anyone
non-profit
could do,
or whatever?
I think anyone could do anything. It probably doesn't need to be a non-profit. It can be a profit.
Like, how did the... Right, Basketball Hall of Fame is not NBA Hall of Fame, right?
No. It is the National Basketball Hall of Fame, or Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame.
So how does that work? How did that come about?
I don't know how it started, but it started a long time ago. And obviously things work differently now.
Because the NFL is the...
Canton.
Is Canton.
That's the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Oh, it's not the NFL. It's the
It is the Pro Football Hall of Fame. There's no other leagues. These leagues don't have halls of fame. The UFC is different in that. There's no NBA Hall of Fame. There's no NFL Hall of Fame, MLB, NHL. Oh, okay.
See?
No.
That's why we should start the MMA Hall of Fame.
Well, yeah, I'm down for that. I think there had been, at least the idea had been broached when sometimes conversations would happen with the MMA Journalists Association. I think it was more of like an ambitious, yeah, one day maybe we can work up to getting that kind of type of thing and try to look into how we would get there. I can say pretty definitively that if the MMA Hall of Fame, an independent MMA Hall of Fame, ever comes along, the MMAJA will have nothing to do. I don't even hear anything from them anymore, so I don't really know what that is. I guess I'm still a member, technically, but I haven't paid dues in a while. If they ask me for dues, I don't think I'm going to pay them again. So, whatever that means. But anyway, all of this is to say, I think we need to do a good job of keeping the memory and the history of this sport better. I think we need to do a better job of it, and not just when one of the all-time pioneering greats of the sport has a near-death experience that involves rescuing the lives of his parents and suffering the loss of his dog. I'd like to find a way where we can do that in a different way.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to do that. Obviously, this is very off-topic for our show, but I'd much rather talk about that than anything that actually happened at UFC Vegas 88. Although the judging stuff is actually going to be, I think there's some interesting things going on. We had some weird fights, right?
Yeah.
There's that. But the events of the fights themselves, this was very much just some fights. Did this event even have to exist, dude?
I think it had to exist for some fights. Not all the fights. Like this is like a perfect example of like Wednesday night fights.
Yeah.
Put this on a Wednesday night. Why are you going against a bunch of college conference championship games?
Sure.
For basketball.
Technically, they would have on Wednesday too, but they would have been the smaller conferences.
On Wednesday, they would have. Of course, they would have. But I mean, it's like, I think you get more eyes on a Wednesday night than you do on a Saturday. People are like, I want to go out. Why would I stay in to watch this? Unless you're the hardcore.
I am with you. I think we need to really start seeing these things happen on Wednesdays more often. Or Thursday or whatever. Wednesday. I'm pushing Wednesday too. But like we can go back to having some UFCs on Wednesdays, and that can be the kind of indicator of like, well, this is the kind of card that's like, hey, if you've got time, you could check it out. But realistically, you know, we're expecting the same type of eyeballs no matter when. I don't think you're going to get more eyeballs just because it's on a Saturday.
I think you get less.
It's possible. I don't know. I've not done the market research.
My hypothesis would be you get less.
It also just really comes down to what does ESPN want for, or whoever ends up being their next TV partner, what do they want them for? When do they want them for?
Well, it's up this week. Or not this week, this year.
This year, yep. Mm-hmm.
I wish it was this week, to be honest.
At some point, we'll hear who the next TV partner is. Who knows what that'll be. You heard Dana saying some very nice things about Netflix recently.
Fingers crossed about Netflix.
I mean, well, your hope is that they'll go to Netflix and then you won't have to pay any pay-per-view fees again.
That is what...
Well, I don't know that that's true.
It probably won't be true, but I
hope
mean,
it would be.
I think that is the door to no pay-per-view.
I do think you might be right that it could take a Netflix-like thing, but I also could see Netflix being like, well, now that we got the UFC, we got these other things, we're actually going to do Netflix Sports, and that's going to be a separate charge that you can opt into.
That's possible.
And, you know, I think still save money, but who knows?
Jake Paul, Mike Tyson, I think, is the test for everything.
It does feel that way, so, yes. Yeah. I have no choice but to watch that and then take a shower right after.
I'm going to watch. I mean, everyone, they're posting all this Mike Tyson training stuff.
Oh, God.
And it's like... And I keep thinking, okay, pads don't hit back, pads don't hit back. But he is hitting those pads pretty hard. So,
look, it's a ludicrous fight. But like, do you really want to see Jake Paul lose to Mike Tyson lose to Jake Paul?
No, that would
is that what you want?
No, but I'm expecting it, and I think
you have to expect it at this point. At this point, we have to just understand that Jake Paul is putting things together because he knows he's going to win.
Yeah, I kind of feel it's a lose-lose for Jake, to be honest.
I disagree.
I think because it's like you should win this fight.
No. Because if he wins, he still gets to say.
Yeah, he does. I get
beat
to say,
Mike Tyson. It doesn't matter.
So win, lose. A win, a lose, and a lose.
No, that's not a thing.
Because if he loses, it's he lost to a guy who's almost 60.
Yeah, it's still Mike Tyson.
It is.
He's going to leave out the other part when he's promoting himself. And most people don't pay attention to anything, so that's all that matters. All
right.
You know, Mike Tyson Punch-Out came out like years before Jake Paul was born.
Yeah.
Yeah. that was an old game. It was a throwback game from long before he was born, back when his parents were probably in college or something. Or high school, who knows? But yeah, moral of the story is we didn't need this card. I don't care. I don't care. It's so stupid. This was a stupid, stupid card. Anyway. we did have some adventures in officiating that came out of the Apex this week. Couple fights. Let's start with the one that actually like really affected the end here in the co-main event. Angelusa and Brian Battle goes down as a no contest. I was watching this, but I didn't get the chance to catch up before we had the chance to record on either of these fights because I sort of watched, but also missed enough detail that I can't weigh in distinctly. So I'm going to let you kind of carry this portion of the show, my friend. So,
okay,
set it up for people first off.
I think Beltran handles this fine. There's no issue
Mike
here.
Beltran, the referee.
Angelosa and Brian Battle, they come to an exchange and... The top of Losa's head and Battle's cheek, chin collide. And then Battle like pushes forward and a finger goes into the eye of Losa. Action stopped. Beltran, you know, says, hey, take your time. We'll get you cold compress to check your eye out. The doctor comes in. He's looking at him. And then like out of nowhere, Angelosa's like, I can't see. The doctor said, he said he can't see. And Beltran's like, all right, fight's over. This was like 2 minutes into the five allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Battle's beside himself. No. Battle clearly winning this fight. Mm-hmm. They announce the no contest and Battle he can't help himself. He starts laying into himself. He calls him a very bad word. That means the guy is a wimp and a chicken, basically.
He called him a chicken?
You can imagine.
He actually called him a chicken in there? Get out of here.
You can imagine the word he actually used. Well, this prompted Losa to actually want to fight now. He's yelling, I kill you. I will kill you. He has to be restrained.
I believe there was another word in there.
Yes.
What type of kill?
Yeah.
An effing kill.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, Losa wants to fight now. It's like, you could have fought if you wanted to fight. You were losing the fight. I don't think this needs to be run back, even though Battle said he'd run it back. I think we learned what we needed to learn from this fight. Brian Battle was beating up on Angelosa. Losa got poked in the eye, took the no contest.
See, my understanding was they were supposed to really give you some time, though, because I missed part of this. So correct me if I'm wrong.
So, I mean,
are they supposed to give you enough time before they like take anything you say?
I guess I don't. I mean, it was like two and a half minutes.
They changed the rules.
I can't see. I think maybe he probably could have said, okay, let's see how it is in a couple minutes. At the end of the 5 minutes,
the doctor,
Beltran. I'm saying,
yeah, Beltran.
Like, you know, keep the cold compress on. Maybe, you know, some of these, you know, get better with time. Maybe he could have done that. I don't know, but I mean, he did say he couldn't see. I don't have any really issue with
the way it was handled.
With the way it was handled.
Okay.
Yeah.
I still like the idea though. I'm not even going to sit here and be critical, but I like the idea of allowing 5 minutes, see how the fighter is at the end of 5 minutes. If he says he can't see, just wait. Mm-hmm. Just wait. Unless he says I'm done fighting or something like that. Like I can't fight or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then keep going. Wait until that 5 minutes is up. If at 5 minutes he says, I cannot see, he doesn't fight.
I mean, reading his body language, he's like, okay, I'm fine with a no contest after this.
Oh, that's fine.
Because he waved it off. He'd make no reaction. You know, you see fighters say things that you shouldn't say if you want to continue fighting and then go ballistic when the fight's called.
Mm-hmm.
This didn't happen then.
I don't know. He went ballistic at one point, though.
Yeah. After he's like, oh, yeah, I really do want to fight you now.
Yeah.
Like, I'll kill you.
effing.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right. And then the other adventure in officiating. Again, we're more or less just saying, hey, everything was handled more or less the way it should be in terms of officiating. Adventures of officiating doesn't have to mean that the official messed up. It's just, we had some interesting things happen outside of the judging, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other situation, also involving referee Mike Beltran, a little different, right? Earlier in the card, set it up.
Yeah, Soothsayer Beltran.
Soothsayer.
Yes.
He saw the future?
He did.
Huh.
So. He knew the fight was going to end in sub. He saw... All right, I'll just set the stage a little bit. We got Jacqueline Amorim and Corey McKenna. Fights on the ground. Jacqueline gets a fully locked in triangle. She's trying to get the arm over. Instead, she starts extending the arm. McKenna is about to tap. She's like mid tap. And
she's like flailing her hand, isn't she?
Like she's like, it, but it's like, I'm about to tap. Referee Beltran or soothsayer Beltran realizes she will tap eventually. And he got a little ahead of himself, yelled, stop. Got in there and he said, no, keep going, keep going, keep going.
Yeah, he says stop.
Yeah.
But he doesn't move his body. He's just shouts stop while watching.
Well, he kind of reaches in.
Yeah, but a little but bit. Not to touch them.
And then, yeah.
What are we doing here?
And he's like, keep going, keep going. She didn't tap, I guess. He doesn't say she didn't tap, but he goes, keep going, keep going.
Yeah, the implication.
They loosen each other. They loosened up, like, for that split second he said stop. And then this time, Amorim transitions to a fully armbar, not locked in a triangle. Gets McKenna on her back, extends it, and gets the real tap to end it. As the future had, anyway.
So, my understanding is, whenever we've talked to any referee, they always stress just how important it is for them not to insert themselves into the fight, right? They want to step back. It's why they don't take points. It's why they do all these things, right? They don't want to be inserting themselves, you know, too much into the fight, right? They're just there to kind of make things happen or see things through, right? But when you shout stop,
mm-hmm.
and then you tell them to keep going and they loosen up the submission as you describe,
mm-hmm.
and then go back to a different way, you have very much inserted yourself into that action. That's a bad job. That's a real bad job. Can't have that happen. I don't know if there's a defense for that. You know, I'm not an expert. We collectively, you and I, or individually, had passed the refereeing course at ABC. That does not make us more expert than Mike Beltran, who was also there at ABC at the more advanced class.
Yeah,
which I'm sure he passed if they do any sort of passing or if they just kind of go over things. But suffice to say, Mike Beltran has refereed more fights than we have.
Yeah.
He knows what's to be done. And maybe there's something to be said for the way that was handled, that, hey, maybe it wasn't so bad, but on the surface, it looks real terrible. Real terrible. Because it changed the actual fight. Could the submission have still happened anyway? Sure. But you're describing a loosening up of the situation and then an adjustment, right?
So, no. She's in a triangle.
Okay.
Okay. He yells, stop. Starts yelling, keep going, keep going, keep going. She let the triangle go. She still had control of the arm. Mm-hmm. And she switches to an arm bar.
But that's still changing.
So
what happened?
It does change it. But I think if had McKenna got an escape, it would have been far worse than what we have. Because McKenna, if she just rips the arm out as she loses it, we don't get put back in that position. So essentially what I'm saying the position really kind of stayed the same.
But he affected it. Did he affect it?
Yes, I understand. Yes. Yeah. But I'm saying it would have been far worse had McKenna escaped because of it.
Sure.
The end result, I don't think, changes.
No, and look, okay, fine.
Because she lost like three times.
But when you say, like, you can't, if there's one thing that I've understood of referees when you're in there, is you can't be indecisive. And yeah, that is indecisiveness, correct? That's indecision.
Yeah, right. But I'm talking strictly results based. This was the right result that we got.
Sure. All's well that ends well. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
But that's not the point. What if it didn't happen that way?
That's what I'm saying. If it didn't happen that way, it would have been a lot worse.
And the what if, obviously, it didn't come to pass, but like it very easily could have. This was not that hard for it to not go that way. What if they really did stop and they listened to the referee and immediately got out of that position? There's no going back. The only thing that the women in the cage did is they didn't directly listen to him right away.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that saved this from not going even worse, is that they didn't comply immediately with him. Because I watched the fight. I just didn't get to watch it as closely, right? I'm aware of what happened, at least in the moment where he's shouting stop and then keep going. There's a beat there. There's enough of a beat that they easily could have like pulled apart. And we've seen stuff like that before. It didn't happen.
It seemed like they were confused. Like,
yeah, they
like
were.
Kiori Kapamanikan was like, why? She just left her arm extended there. And when in reality, she could have ripped it out probably there. Because it was probably loosened up enough there. But, yeah. I get what you're saying. I think it worked out well for everyone involved except Corey McKenna.
Yeah. Crisis was averted. I get it. But crisis was absolutely created as well. It didn't need to be, and it was. And this was also a bad job. This was just a bad job. Also, I'm not saying that Mike Beltran is a terrible referee, but I'm saying he handled this one really bad. And it's not the first time we've talked about a situation he didn't handle it that well. This is one of the worst, though, I think.
Say he, if he just waits.
Result aside.
If he just waits a second and doesn't jump the gun and be, you know, the soothsayer, Corey McKenna taps.
Yeah.
And we're not even talking about this.
Right. Because he did what he's supposed to do in that situation, which is not what he did.
Right.
He didn't do what he was supposed to do.
Yeah, and really interesting. You know what? Just to play devil's advocate a little
bit. All right, sure. I like devils. Let's talk about them. Let's advocate for those guys.
Maybe he thought she was grabbing the glove and he's yelling, stop, and he's going to reset them. But that wasn't what it was.
No, I don't think that's what it was.
But I mean, because stop doesn't just mean end of the fight. It means stop the action. I got to assess something. I got to deal with something.
It was...
But that... I don't know. Maybe I'm reaching.
I think you're reaching. Yeah. I did preface everything by saying maybe there's something I'm not aware of in the situation. And hey, officials, you know how to reach me. If someone knows better, you know how to reach me. If I've nailed it, you know how to reach me. But I think I'm looking at this situation the way you really should be looking at it. Is this was a really bad situation that fortunately didn't end up as bad as it could have. But this conceivably could have just destroyed the result of the fight. It really could have gone that way had some very realistic things happened off of this. It just didn't go that way. So all's well that ends well, but can't have this situation. I mean, that is indecision. Absolutely, it looks like indecision to me. So
also, here's this.
Yeah.
I would have no problem ruling what Corey McKenna did as a tap.
Okay.
I would have no issue with
that. Where she kind of taps the air?
Yeah. I would have no issue if you ruled that a tap. It looks like a tap. Well,
that type of thing starts to get scrutinized then. That's a different thing entirely, right? But that is, again, that's not what happened. If he read as a tap, he let it stop and then go anyway, which you're not supposed to do.
Yeah.
So no matter what.
I mean, this was
not handled cleanly.
No, it's a tough job. We've seen Herb
Dean. It is a tough job.
We've seen Herb Dean jump in there and make contact and, like, jump out.
Sure.
So.
Then I don't like it when he does it either.
It's like, you know.
You know who I don't see do that type of thing?
Who?
At least I can't. I mean, if there are examples, I'm missing them. I don't see it from Mark Goddard.
No.
I don't see it from Jason Herzog.
Mark Goddard came under fire.
He did. We didn't even touch upon that last week. After the show, I was like, man, we really should have gotten on that. We didn't make any notes for this one.
Aaron Bronstetter handled that perfect. I mean, I thought Mark Goddard handled it perfect. I don't really even think it was an adventure of poor officiating. I thought it was fine. I thought it was good.
Aaron Bronstetter.
Yeah.
Who's that guy?
He outlined everything perfectly.
Sure. No, we're not going to go back that far because, again, we don't have any notes for that one. It's a little bit of old news. We're only focused on the very important events of Saturday at the UFC Apex, my friends. Very, very important. And speaking of important, I think we got to move on to the contested rounds, which, of course, are prefaced, as always, by the unanimity report, which I've now learned to just say slowly so that I get it correctly.
You got it.
I can't say unanimity report. If I enunciate, I can nail it. But yeah, there weren't a ton of rounds for this. We had a decent amount of finishes, decent amount of fights that didn't go the distance, but you know, 21 rounds is still, it's nothing to sneeze at. 16 of them were unanimous, which is always nice to see. 76.2%. 3 out of 4 is pretty darn good.
That is
pretty good. Little more than. No 8-9 splits, so we're only talking about who won the round in each of these cases.
Mm-hmm.
We have 5 contested rounds to get to, but in addition to those 5 contested rounds, we have 2 rounds for the 10-7 watch. And not only do we have 2 rounds for the 10-7 watch, they all happened in the same fight as one of our other contested rounds. And the 10-7 watches go each way for each fighter. This is one of the most bizarre fights that I can really think of in terms of the way the scores came out. So I wasn't watching this fight at all. I had a very busy night otherwise. So I kind of had the fights on and wasn't that focused. And look, I know this was the card I shouldn't have missed, but unfortunately I did a little bit. But of course, we've caught up since then to do what we do. But I was looking online and I saw people posting their scores. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, that's a clear 28-27. I'm like, what? What do you mean a clear 20-27? Would he lose points here? Mm-hmm. And it was exactly this. So that fight, of course, was on the main card. Christian Rodriguez getting the split decision victory over Isaac Dolgarian. 2 28-27s and a 28-27 going the other way. You just don't see that anymore, Cotton.
Just don't see it.
Just don't see it. Let's start at the top, though, because there's almost like a flow to this fight. It starts heavy one way, in the middle it's split, and then the end it's heavy the other way. So round one is our first for the 10-7 watch. The judges for this fight, by the way, set it up right now. Sal D'Amato, Anthony Maness, and Ron McCarthy. This first round is won by Isaac Dulgarian. 10-8 across the board. We're not going to go through the round in depth. We don't tend to do that with these 10-7 watches unless, hey, maybe we felt like it, right? The question we just kind of ask off the top of the bat right here, is this a 10-7, dude?
No. Not a 10-7. I mean, you do have overwhelming dominance. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
And I think you got overwhelming duration.
I think you do. I actually do. I think you probably got both of those.
However, it's just because he's just owning them in grappling transitions with, you know, no real damage. Some punches here and there.
It's not no damage. There's some, but...
I mean, he gets up. He's a little bloody, so he does hit him with a few shots, yeah. But it's not overwhelming damage.
No, certainly not. It doesn't approach it. You're right.
A couple sub attempts. I think this is just a slam dunk 10-8.
Yeah, and I'm with it. I think the judges agreed there. I think they were aces on this one. You'll certainly see a judge like Sal D'Amato give an 8, be bold enough to give an 8 regularly, even giving a 7 from time to time, including mm-hmm. earlier this year.
Yes.
Ron McCarthy certainly usually in step on the 8s or the 9s. Mm-hmm. I think he's got a good read on that. You don't often see it from Anthony Maness, so the fact that all three judges ended up on the 8 here without overwhelming damage as one of these situations, I think good job by the judges on that.
Yep.
Giving this one to Dulgarian just an 8. But yes, it is just an 8. We're going to talk a little bit more about round 2, though, because this is our split round. The whole fight hinges on this round. What happened in round 2?
Interesting round. Fight starts. Rodriguez, you know, locks up an arm in guillotine as Dulgarian, you know, tries to get straight back to his wrestling. Dulgarian gets out. He's on the fence. He lands a couple. He gets landed on by Rodriguez with these side elbows, you know, that we tend to see now as the takedown defense against guys. I thought they're pretty good. A lot of the round was Dulgarian clinching with not much else to go with it. When they were at distance for how, you know, not often, I think he did land a couple
more late
decent strikes. But I do think Rodriguez was more effective. He, even though he was the one being pressed against the fence, he landed a big knee to the head. He's landing these elbows. I think he had the more effective offense. So 10-9 Rodriguez for me.
The damage is coming from him, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think really that's what it comes down to. I mean, yes, you do have to weigh effective grappling, but how effective was his grappling? What was the effect it was having on Rodriguez compared to what effect was the striking of Rodriguez having on Dulgarian?
Mm-hmm.
I think hindsight being what it was, I think we saw that probably helped a little bit by the end of the third round, but even within those 5 minutes that have to be assessed pretty much immediately after the round ends,
mm-hmm.
I think Rodriguez is the one. I think you got to go with the one who's landing the actual damage here.
Yeah.
There's just nothing really that Dulgarian did to hurt his opponent,
mm-hmm.
you know, or even really diminish him in this round. It's more just he kind of, Rodriguez is just kind of dealing with it at this point. First round, he definitely was dealing. He was doing a good job. This round, no. So, I feel good about Rodriguez here. I don't think it's bad, necessarily, because there's just not that much offense in this round.
It's kind of like, okay, Rodriguez is just accepting of where Dulgarian wants to put him.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, I'll fight wherever you want this to happen. And he was doing the better of the fighting.
I feel like Rodriguez is the better score, but it's not, like, the only score.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, it's close. It's kind of close mm-hmm. to it, but I don't think it's quite there. I'll give Anthony Maness the benefit of the doubt here because there's just not that much that is landing either. So mm-hmm. I feel like it's probably easy to miss it depending on your angle, right? We had two judges that saw it the right way. I think ultimately that this is fine. Not so bad. Those judges, by the way, were Sal D'Amato and Ron McCarthy, who saw it as you and I did for Rodriguez, which ended up giving him the fight, right? Mm-hmm. Because round three balances out round one with the unanimous 8s on each side of the ledger. It's push, mm-hmm. Which we don't. I think this is the only fight I can think of like that.
Right.
I can't think of another right. fight. I'm not saying there is no other fight like that, but this is the only one I can think of, and I'm kind of a nerd about this. So as far as MMA media goes, I might be the one who's got the best memory for this stuff.
If 8,
depending on if you happen to be at that fight or something, right?
If 8 was more attainable, we'd have this more often.
That's true, and I like that.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah. But anyway, so round three, again, this is the one that is back on our 10-7 watch. A 10-8 all around from those three judges, D'Amato, Maness, and McCarthy for Rodriguez here. But Dan, the question you and I have is this a 10-7?
Definitely not.
Definitely
not. There's a lot in this round that is non-offense, kind of, when they're just staring at each other on the feet.
I think there's more damage done in this
round. And that was the first round. Yeah, that's what I'm getting. There is more damage coming from Rodriguez. However, it is still far away from overwhelming damage.
And it's not as overwhelming in the dominance and duration phases as it was. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Just another good eight.
Here's a question for you. Who would you rather be if you know, the worst of both worlds? You got to pick one of these terrible choices. Would you rather be Rodriguez getting ragdolled in round one, or a dead tired Dolgarian eating punches and strikes and everything from Rodriguez in round three?
Who would I rather?
If you had to be somebody.
I know which fighter I would be. I don't know if that...
No. That's not the same.
I know, but I'm trying to...
You'll be Dolgarian in round three. I understand.
Exactly.
Yeah, but who would you rather be?
I don't want to get punched.
No, you don't.
Okay, so here's the thing. I'd rather be Dolgarian in round one, and I'd rather be Rodriguez in round three.
But that's not the same.
Oh.
That's the opposite. I would, if I had to be one of the losing side in each of those rounds, I would rather be Rodriguez in the first round.
I would rather,
I'm still having more energy left. And it's like, and by the third round, you could tell he's just not, he doesn't have anything left. And he's just praying he gets those 5 minutes out of the way, right?
Yeah.
Eating harder strikes and being dead tired. That sounds awful to me. That sounds like just the worst. So I would rather have been Rodriguez in round one than Dolgarian round three.
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right. It doesn't really matter. We're hopefully never going to find ourselves in that situation unless one of those guys happens to be prowling outside of our recording studio. Oh, they're not.
That would have been a really fast airplane.
That would be. That really would be, because it's we're still only like several hours after the fights. All right, let's move on though. We've got four more contested rounds. Two of them are in our next fight. Ovince St. Preux turning back the clock at age 40 to get the win over Kennedy and Zechiku. Split decision. 229-28 for him. 129-28 the other way. We're split over rounds two and three because this is an alternative decision.
Bruce should call it that.
They should. Someone other than me should call it that. Even our friends who acknowledge that I have a name for it don't always forget what the name is. Like our guy Spencer Kite. Spencer, it's an alternative decision. Write it down, my friend. You got to spread the word. Spread the gospel of the alternative decision for me. I need you. All right. But yeah, so we're going on in round two and three. And in both cases, in Zechiku is the predominant score, the majority score among the judges. It is just different judges each time after a round one that did go to St. Preux. So that's how we got here. What's happening in round two? And how do we end up with that? So
there you go. This was a fun fight overall. I did not expect that from this fight. I really thought it would be just a
This was definitely one of the most surprisingly fun fights in a while.
Yeah.
Because when you look at it, you're like, nope. And then it ended up being good.
Especially outside of round one, the bigger guys, you just don't expect volume like this.
No.
Like
even more later, but
very close round, and Zechiku is landing good body kicks, good 1-2, snapping the head back. OSP is landing good to the body. Heavy upstairs. I think OSP got better reactions when he landed. More immediately impactful. That's why I scored for him.
Yeah, his just looked to be having their desired effect to a higher degree than in Zechiku's. I thought OSP was doing work here. They're both doing fine. It's not that anyone was in bad shape or anything. Well, I don't think either one of them was doing super great as far as how they felt, but they're rolling with it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked OSP here. It's not crazy to go the other way, but I feel good about OSP. And you did too.
Yep.
So you and I were in the minority here. Mm-hmm. Along with Judge Adelaide Byrd, we went, all three of us went against Derek Cleary and Junichiro Camijo. Maybe things felt differently there. I don't know. I'm wondering why they went that way, because I did think that the heavier strikes were in fact landed by St. Preux, but hey, maybe I'm wrong.
Possibly.
It's hard to say. Nonetheless, we had what we had. We saw what we saw, and we ended up with Judge Byrd. And what does that mean for Judge Byrd?
Couchside override. You add a little flair at the end.
Add a little at the end. Yeah, why not? We don't give a lot of couchside overrides to Adelaide Burge. He deserves it here. A little flair. More flair, in fact. Always more flair. Gosh, I love Office Space. More flair.
More flair.
More flair. round three, man. This is, another situation where Nzechiku is the majority round scorer. But we have to see if that's the way we went. What happened?
I mean, it could be recency bias, but man, this might be round of the year contender at the moment.
This is a crazy one.
This was a good round of fighting and pleasantly surprised. They slugged it out. They deserve a bonus for this round. OSP drops Nzechiku with an uppercut. He's landing big uppercuts throughout here. Wasn't a big dropping. Nzechiku got right back up. We still went down. But at this point, I'm thinking, why is this split? But, you know, Nzechiku, no quit in here, starts to take over a bit. He's landing good punches to OSP, who is kind of exhausted at this time, but it's not slowing him down. And really what puts it over for me is Nzechiku lands a sick knee to the body that you could tell hurt OSP. And I was like, yeah, that overcame the knockdown, put him over for me. 10-9 Nzechiku.
I also had 10-9 Nzechiku. It is really close. There's definitely a point where I thought Nzechiku starts to take it back a little bit, you know. I want to say it's one of these two rounds actually that St. Preux landed more strikes and we went against them. I can't remember.
He landed almost it was like 57 to like 48 or something like that, or 40, maybe less than that possibly.
Actually, I think he landed more than that. By the way, this fight did not get any post fight bonuses.
Well, that's insane.
There was no fight of the night. They gave out four performance bonuses.
How was there no fight of the night when this was the fight of the night?
Because this is what they did. I don't know. Talk to Dana.
But fight of the night is a performance bonus. There's always a fight of the night. Whether it's the worst fight you've ever seen on another card, it still was the best fight on this card. Like, what are we doing here?
So here's what's crazy, to give you the numbers. Again, and numbers don't tell the story, right? OSP is credited with a knockdown.
Well, it was a knockdown for sure.
Just work with me here. He's credited with one knockdown and landing 73 significant strikes in this round. 73.
But as we
255. Know. And as we know, yes, that doesn't necessarily tell the whole story. No,
but as we know, any strike at distance is counted as a significant strike for UFC stats.
Sure.
So that just could be a love tap, but as long as it's from distance, it's
all I'm saying is strike. When two guys are standing for almost the entirety of a round, which is what happened here.
Yeah.
Usually you don't see 73 strikes landed.
Oh yeah.
At this weight class. Exactly. So. Especially in the third round for a 40-year-old man going against a younger guy. You just don't see that, Cotton.
Yeah. Someone tell me how he didn't get fight of the night.
I'm going to watch dodgeball later. Great. But, and despite all those stats, you and I went the other way, and we feel good about
that. What did Nzechiku's final numbers?
55. He had 55 strikes on the numbers here. So, again, high volume on both, but he was behind on the number of credited strikes. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily know if I believe those numbers sometimes. You know what I mean? Sometimes they seem a little off.
Like, well, yeah, a lot of times it's like, oh, did that land on the shoulder?
Which is why we don't necessarily just go by those numbers. But having said that, you're talking about a very high output of strikes. I do think Nzechiku really does take it back, though. I think even though he was in trouble early, most of the best work from St. Preux starts to dissipate as the fight goes on, and Nzechiku is coming on strong. Five rounds in this fight, I feel like Nzechiku is going to take it. I don't know that St. Preux would have two more rounds in him at the pace it was going. But
to agree.
But it isn't that. It is what it is. And even though we gave the third round to Nzechiku, we gave the first two rounds to St. Preux.
But you know what?
Same card you and I have as Adelaide Bird, all three rounds.
A point to be made for just not making random fights just because they're the last to go on five rounds. These two would have fought different if this was five rounds.
We also wouldn't have made it a five-round fight.
but you never know. These two, OSP's headlining against Nzechiku because. Like, if this, this is five rounds, they're not going to fight the way they fought. Sure. They probably pace themselves.
Yeah, but we would want that.
We would want them to pace themselves?
No, we would not want that for this fight.
That's exactly what I'm saying. So when you're putting these random heavyweights at a five-round fight for no reason, when they'd be, you know, maybe they wouldn't even make the main card on a pay-per-view, schedule them for three rounds, they might fight with a little more urgency.
I like what we ended up with in the headliner.
Well, we did.
We got it within a round. They did the job. They did what they were supposed to do.
I think that's because Ty doesn't know what to do.
I don't care.
I think Ty only knows one way to fight.
Yes.
So, and that's great.
And that's why he did the job.
Right. Even though he lost, he did the job.
He did what he was supposed to do. the two judges in the majority, along with us again, Judge Bird and Judge Cleary, it was Judge Comejo who gave this round to OSB. Totally defensible, 100% defensible, not a problem. Surprisingly solid fight that, yes, probably deserved bonus money and it didn't get it, which is
a shame.
It is a shame, but at least they gave four people who got finishes bonuses too, which is nice. If you're not enough people get the finish and get a bonus, so yeah. You can't, and I guess they, in theory, they're probably sitting there saying, oh, we can't win. McMahon's, everyone complaining.
great McMahon.
Dude, have you ever heard him talk? That's exactly how he talks.
Okay.
Yes. He sounds like Sling Blade. French fried potatoes, and everyone's complaining about the Apex.
With Australian accent.
Yeah, was I doing an Aussie there?
I thought he is from Australia.
Is he?
Yeah, I thought McMahon's in Australia.
I don't know that I've heard McMahon speak.
I'm pretty sure he's from Australia.
Okay. I didn't know he'd ever spoken.
I will Google that just to make sure.
He just tweets. Whenever anyone complains about the Apex, that's the only time he ever tweets either. he was going at it with McMahon on social media tonight.
All right.
I think it was friendly, but is he not
Australian? I'm looking. Oh. No, I'm almost positive he is.
All right, well, while you think about that, I'm going to set up the fact that we've got two more rounds to talk about, my friend. One of them was
native of Sydney, Australia.
Sydney, Australia. Look at that. Yeah. Okay. Our final split decision of the night, because the other round was less impactful, but this one decided the fight here. Danny Silva got the win over Josh Coulibal. All 29-28s. Regular, normal split decision. Regular scores. Round two is where they're split. Let's talk about it. What happened in the second round?
So I thought both guys landed some good shots, but for the most part, I really feel Coulibal's landing bigger and more often. Silva's getting the back waist lock against the fence, drags Coulibal down a couple times, but, I mean, he's not even throwing Storley knees in these. He's in this position for a long time. I feel strongly that in this being a Coulibal round, it's not that I can't see it the other way. I can understand an argument there. But I feel real confident in this being Coulibal.
You know, 10-9. I actually don't feel very strongly about this one way or the other. I think it's pretty close, and I think reasonably could just go the other way. I happen to have Silva by a slim margin. That was more or less the notes that I had.
All right.
I don't have much more to add. Could easily gone the other way. It just didn't for me. But I was in the majority. You were not. I saw it with judges Derek Cleary and Ron McCarthy. You saw it the same as Judge Sal D'Amato.
Tell me and Sal roll.
I guess so. But no override.
All right.
I prevented that. I said, nope. We will send no mail to Wisconsin. One more round, my friend. Chad Anhelger.
Mm-hmm.
No question who got the win here over Charlampos Gregorio. Did I get that? Did I nail it?
I wouldn't say you nailed it.
No, probably not. Another Ray Longo guy. But this was two 29-28s and a 30-27. We are split on the first round, which, of course, you know, the first round is it's impactful, right? Kind of sets up the way the rest of the fight can look. So let's talk about this first round here.
Pretty close back and forth battle here. I think Anhelger landed better. He had some good leg kicks, had some decent knees in the clinch. They're better than Storley's.
plus or minus a Storley. Yeah. That's the line. It's the Mendoza line.
Exactly. Yeah. Perfect.
Here's
yes.
your baseball reference.
You know, Gregorio did get on top. He landed some ground and pound from there. But in the end, I like it for Anhelger. 10-9.
I also like it for Anhelger. This was not a particularly fun round to watch. But I think he did. But not a lot's happening anyway. So hard to get too bent out of shape of it either way.
Mm-hmm.
I did side with you. We sided with Derek clearly. We went against Adelaide Bird, who we never agree with, except for in that whole fight that we just talked about, and Jaron Villel, who we haven't seen judge in a little while. So welcome back to the chair, Jaron. Jaron, of course, taught that referee course,
yes.
or helped teach that course alongside mm-hmm. of Blake Rice.
Yeah.
That's neither here nor there. What does it mean for Mr. Derek Cleary, who we happen to see it alongside in the
couch side overall? No flair.
No, but I tried to extend it. I tried to extend it. He deserves it. Judge of the year last year.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And that was it for our contested rounds. We had 7 finishes on this one. So, hey, at least even though this fight card is an abomination and the co-main event and ended with nobody winning the fight. Hey, we had some decent finishes otherwise. One TKO and six submissions, including, was there two technical submissions on there? I actually didn't know.
Yeah, that, there was two.
I think there were two. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Look at that. Two tech subs.
GM3 over Brian Barberini.
Yes, yes.
Was one of them.
That's right. And then three fights ended in the first round. Well, first round finishes. I guess in the first round period, because that no contest was in round two. So, and it was after a round that everyone agreed on, so we didn't have to really talk about that part.
Yeah.
What was your favorite out of the seven?
I'm just going to shout this. It wasn't my favorite, but we did have a leg kick TKO.
We did. Yeah, actually, so. That is true. That's that we had no fights ended due to strikes to the head. That's weird.
Yeah, that is.
That's
wild.
A little strange. All right. Again, an abomination.
Yeah, Tiago Moises. I will stand by that one.
Yeah. And that was good. That was really good job on Tiago Moises, to be fair. But yeah, what was the one you actually had?
My favorite was Jacqueline Amorim earning two submission victories
two
over
submission victories, that's
Corey
true.
McKenna.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
And you?
I have to give props to Marcin Tybura, who choked out Tai Tuivasa within a round, completing the mission. Always get it done in one round if you are over 206 pounds. I mean, do it every time, actually. That'd be great for all the men in the first round. But for the heavyweights, you got to at least treat it the way I want heavyweight fights to be, which is get it done in 5 minutes.
You know, that was good on how that one ended. He was kind of like snoring. Were you listening when he was stuck in the choke?
He sounds like you when you're breathing.
He was like just snoring like really loud.
Yeah.
And then he, I guess he went, he must have went out, but he came back too pretty quickly.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't protest or anything. He knew it was over. Good on Marcin.
Always get it done in five.
And the thing is, he had Marcin hurt.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's blood all over Marcin Tybura.
I mean, this was a good round.
And then it was a really good one round heavyweight fight.
Yeah.
What did I describe to you? And as I said, this is about everything that you would want it to be in a five in a heavyweight fight.
Yeah.
What did I say? It's about as much heavyweight MMA as one should ever be subjected to. They did the job. That was my direct quote to you because I texted it. So fair, accurate.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. I think so. And that is it. We don't have to talk about the greatest fight card of all time anymore. We can move on to two fight cards this coming weekend because we now have the rebirth of Bellator MMA as Bellator Champion Series. Should we only call it Bellator Champion Series from now on?
Yes.
Should it only be called that? Like, there's no second reference where we just call it Bellator?
BCS.
Yeah, it's a bunch of BCS.
Belfast edition.
This is it is still marked as 302.
Is it really?
Yeah, they are. Absolutely. They're going with 302.
Oh, wow. I would assume Tapology would have went with that name, but they went with Bellator Champion Series Belfast.
Oh, okay. No,
interesting.
I'll pull up. I saw a poster.
You know what Tapology also puts, also known as what other events going by?
Well, so, yeah, that is one. But yeah, when you look at the poster. The poster says Bellator 302, Belfast.
Okay. Oh, this is weird. Also known as Anderson vs. Moore.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a billion ways you can call it this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have the 302 on this poster here.
I see. So. I'm looking at a 302 poster. Yeah. Anyway, neither here nor there. But it is in Belfast, and it is Bellator 302, and it is taking place, the main card, at the main card or the start of the whole thing.
I think, yeah, 12 o'clock start.
You gotta write down the main card, bro.
I don't know when the main card starts.
Nobody cares about these prelims.
Here's what I will say
about... These are stupid prelims.
Wait. Well, here's what I will say about the new era of Bellator going overseas to Europe. We don't have 18 fights.
No,
we have 12.
We don't.
So I would say 3 o'clock...
Good and bad.
I would say 3 o'clock start for the main card. If I had to guess.
Ballparking at 3 o'clock. Yes. But also, we don't know where this is airing in the United States of America yet, because I don't believe, as best as I was able to find, that they have announced their TV partner in the US of A. Right.
We do know you can watch it on DAZN, though.
Yeah.
If all fails.
In America or just in
anywhere.
Parts of the world?
I think anywhere.
All right. I don't know. I'm putting everything with an asterisk for this one. All I know is it's very weird that that they have not made this clear yet. What is going on? Everything about the way they do things with
maybe
BFL
things
is,
still, maybe it's still up
it's
in the
never
air.
Just straightforward.
Could maybe, still be in the air.
I mean, it certainly could be, but like, what the heck? I don't know.
Less than
it's
a week
very
away.
Weird. It's just bizarre because this is actually like the main card for this was not terrible, not at all.
Actually, I'm actually intrigued by it.
I think this is actually a better card overall than especially the main card than the UFCs, which we'll get to in a minute. But there's two title fights here. Corey Anderson going for the vacant title at 205 pounds against Carl Moore, local to Ireland. I don't know if he's Northern Ireland or if he's Republic of Ireland, but.
I'm not going to go by what flag they're putting next to the guy because who knows how right they are.
Where is this? Where are you seeing
on topology?
Flag? On topology? I'll probably trust it. Which flag is it?
It's the Republic of Ireland.
Republic of Ireland?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Happy St. Patrick's Day. As
he's
we recorded,
okay,
it's now crossed over.
He's affiliated with SBG.
Yeah.
So.
But anyway, decent title fight. I'm interested to see it. You know, Anderson is at this point a very legitimate top 205 pounder in the world. One of them anyway. Mm-hmm. And if Carl Moore beats him, that puts him certainly in that conversation too.
Sure.
I'm interested to see how that goes. And Patricio Pitbull getting added to this one late because they had the other title fight fallout that was supposed to be Liam McCourt. Was it a title fight or was it just a?
I don't know if it was a title, but it was Liam McCourt versus Sinead Kavanaugh.
Actually, now I'm trying to think what it was supposed to be because they were supposed to have two title fights, but I don't think that was a title fight. I don't know. It's neither here nor there anymore because we did again. I think this was addition by subtraction and addition. It's not exactly that, but Patricio Pitbull against Jeremy Kennedy. I like this fight. I talked to Pitbull recently ahead of this one. Always good to talk with Pitbull. Curious about what is going to go into his next few fights with Bellator, PFLator. He had said before the sale was completed, mm-hmm. before the sale was announced and everything like that, he'd said that, you know, he'd probably just let things run its course and maybe test free agency, finally.
Mm.
But he was less committed to that idea now. I read it as a little bit of gamesmanship or maybe just kind of trying to play close to the vest a little bit now. But I think he wants to see how things go. He's very much, doesn't sound like he's made up his mind on how he feels about the new regime. It's probably going to be less loyalty now. It's just a name now. It's a very different thing. So I'm curious to see. But Jeremy Kennedy, that's a decent fight. Kennedy's interesting because he has fought previously for, you know, old Bellator. He's fought for mm-hmm. the UFC. And he did fight for PFL, PFL proper. And he's got a winning record. Actually, I don't know if it's a winning record, but he doesn't have a losing record at any of them.
Well, I mean, he technically beat Aaron Pico.
Yes.
Technically.
Yeah, but either way. I like this fight. It's interesting. Patricio's coming off of a surgery. I believe it was related to his neck or his back. I'm blanking right now because it's 3 a.m. But, I'm curious to see how he'll respond to this. This is not an easy matchup.
I mean, it's great for Kennedy. He was supposed to fight James Gallagher.
Yeah.
And he got bumped up.
Yeah, it's a massive upgrade for him. Gallagher's still on the card. He's fighting Leandro Ego.
Mm-hmm.
I like that one at 145. Patricio, by the way, defending his 145-pound title. He has lost his last two fights, Pitbull.
At different weight classes?
Yes. he lost down at 35, and he lost up at 154, I believe, was the weight.
Okay.
And he took that fight on hyper short notice. Probably should not have, realistically.
Was that a Ryzen fight?
It was on the Ryzen Bellator crossover, the second one. Yeah. Probably should not have taken that one. But at any rate. And then also Fabian Edwards going against Aaron Jeffrey. That's a key 185-pound fight.
Yeah. Leon's brother.
That's right. He's coming off of a loss fighting for the title. Didn't go his way against Johnny Eblen.
Doesn't go a lot of people's way against Johnny Eblen.
Actually, no one has. It's not gone anyone's way against Johnny Eblen. Not their way. I mean, sometimes I've had successes, but they've still not won. I like this card. I imagine the judging will probably get some good judges out there. I don't know how Bellator's going to do it. I don't know if they're going to do the same thing they were doing when, you know, Bellator was operated a little differently by different people.
Well, there's an amateur fight on this card.
I didn't see that.
that's the start. Okay. So, I mean, we know PFL loves their amateur bouts.
Especially
when it's Biagio Ali.
He's pro now. He turned pro.
He is a pro now.
Yeah, he turned pro. He won his pro debut.
Mm-hmm.
Look, if previously their amateur fights were isolated to if you were a descendant of the greatest boxer of all time, but they've changed the rules. So now all people who descended from all other people are open to that as well.
Yeah, a 2-2 versus a 2-3 amateur bout at 130 pounds.
But I'm hopeful that we'll still see some of those top judges from the UK come over, maybe some other judges from America or maybe some other judges from Europe. I hope that we have some solid judging here in Belfast.
I think we will.
Yeah, hopefully. And then, of course, back over to the MMA Warehouse, the off-brand MMA Warehouse, UFC Vegas 89. This one's much later. It is not in the middle of the afternoon on a Friday. It is like almost the middle of the night on Saturday, 10 p.m. main card start time, Eastern time zone. Headlined by Amanda Ribas against Rose Namajunas at 125 pounds. I think it'll be a fun fight. I do.
Man, I'm a Rose fan.
Like Rose. A lot of people like Ribas as well. Yeah. You know, it's an interesting fight. I like it for five rounds, too.
Honestly,
I like giving
five
them five
rounds.
This is fun.
Because you know they're going to be able to make it all five.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. I think they'll probably use all five. But we'll see. I mean, Rose knows how to finish fights. Ribas fights hard. Mm-hmm. We'll see. We'll see. I like it, though. I think I'm happy with the headliner. We're not always happy with the headliner, right? When they did the darn thing in the warehouse the other day, at least with the heavyweights. But there's not a ton on this card that I'm super enthused about. Billy Quarantillo, for sure, is always fun. Yusuf Zolal, I think that'll be a good fight at 145. I like that one. I also like Kurt Hollibaugh against Trey Ogden. I think those guys come to fight, too. I like that one as well. That's on the prelims.
So I don't know if I like this fight, but I like the story behind it. Hmm. The co-main, Carl Williams versus Justin Taffa, where Junior stepped in a couple weeks ago for Justin, and now Justin is taking this fight for Junior.
I believe I was calling this the trade where Carl Williams stepped in for or it was the other one, for a Taffa to be named later.
Okay.
I think you'd appreciate that. More baseball references for you, my friend. Yeah,
cash considerations.
I mean, that's maybe they should have considered just not having this fight.
I don't know. I think Carl Williams. I
think Carl Williams is gonna take Taffa down for 15 minutes, and maybe ground him out in one of the later rounds. That would be what I'm guessing out of it. But I don't know. I think a lot of us can look at this on paper and say, well, I think I know what's gonna happen here. Maybe I'm wrong. I'd love to be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But I think I'm right. I think I'm right. I'll be happy if I'm wrong. Contested round candidate, I settled on Miles. I don't know what I was trying to say. Miles Johns against Cody Gibson at 135 pounds. I think that could actually be a decent fight.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think we're going to be talking about at least one of these rounds.
I'm thinking Billy Q and Yusuf are going to give us some interesting.
I think Billy Q is going
to
find a way for this fight to end early, whether it's him or the other guy. That's what I think. That's what I hope, because I think that's the fight I'm looking at as like the, I don't know if it's a sleeper candidate, because it's like the only other fight that most people are going to look at, I think. I would put this one in the co-main. I don't know why it's not.
Yeah, and I have we may be delayed next week.
Oh, that's true. Yes. Yeah. Dan's got plans.
I got a busy weekend.
Got things to do.
I got a busy weekend.
He's way too cool for you guys. He doesn't like our listeners like I do.
I'm kind of hoping I get to see, you know, super fan Ari this weekend.
Oh,
coming
yeah.
Coming up.
Okay.
On Sunday, hopefully, he decides he's going to play cards.
Okay.
Where I'm dealing again. That'll be pretty cool.
That's fun.
But other than that, I'll be getting... doing whatever.
You know, I'm going to tell you, because recently you were dealing cards in my town.
I was,
at an event.
Yeah.
And I, after we recorded last week,
mm-hmm.
We didn't record right after. We recorded the name. But on the Sunday, I should say. The Sunday after UFC 299, I took one of my kids to a birthday party. Saw one of the other dads there, someone I know, some good, been friends with for a while. And it turns out he was also at that.
Oh.
But he did not have you. You were not his dealer.
Okay.
He had some other guy.
All right.
So
interesting.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
And I know, and I'm really glad that we said that on air, because I know all of our listeners really cared about that anecdote. So, hey, I did that for you guys. You're welcome.
All right. That does it. We'll be back again next week, probably Tuesday.
Yeah, figure on Tuesday or something like that. You'll get it when we get it, all right? Deal with it.
You'll get a show.
But you will, because we love you guys.
Thanks for listening.
Take care, everyone.